Welcome to Lighthouse Faith Podcast, where we are moving forward in truth and love. I'm Lauren Green, Chief Religion Correspondent for Fox News Channel and author of the book Lighthouse Faith and the new devotional Light for Today. So how do you make a dream come true even when the world seems stacked against you and no one expects you to achieve anything? How do you become a world-class percussionist, drummer, performing with the likes of Lenny Kravitz and world-renowned groups, overcoming being raised by a single mother, abandoned by the father you never knew, yet have a faith that can move mountains? Well, this is just a small description of Zorro, no last name, just Zorro, who's written an incredible memoir of, quote, a mother's love, a son's perseverance, and dreaming big. And the book is called Maria's Scarf. And Zorro joins me now here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'll tell you, just to know your story and to know your background brings tears to my eyes in terms of what you've achieved and what you've overcome. But you don't even seem like you've overcome anything because you never walk around with this thing on your shoulder says, well, you know, I came from this background and I'm really, you know, you never exude anything but pure joy.
That is the sweet, I think that might be the sweetest thing anyone's ever said about me. That touches my heart, what you just said.
But you are such a person of strength, of faith, and really, I just can't imagine. So I want to go back to your journey, because this is an incredible journey. So first of all, people need to know who you are. Yeah. Tell us who you are in terms of your profession now.
Yeah, so my name is Zorro, Z-O-R-O, but when you get the book, you will learn that that wasn't my birth name. I became Zorro later in life, and there's a whole story about how I took on the name Zorro, because that wasn't my birth name. But I have been a drummer for the last 40 years in the music industry. Started playing with Philip Bailey from Earth, Wind & Fire when I was about 20 years old. Then I started touring with the New Edition in their heyday. Then from there, I toured with Bobby Brown in his heyday. Then Lenny Kravitz for many years off and on. Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons, Lisa Marie Presley, tons and tons of people over 40 years. But at that same time, I've also been a minister, and I've been a pastor, and I've been a evangelist. I'm a radical evangelist, and I have spoken everywhere from San Quentin Prison to the jungles of Ghana, Africa, to inner city schools, to the White. I mean, my life is like, I'm like the real living Forrest Gump. All the things that weren't supposed to happen to Forrest happened. In the movie, you see him with Elvis at Dubai. That's been my life. And I've traveled with Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft. He was the fourth richest guy in the world. But I was the same kid at one point who lived in a 1962 Chevy Nova with his mother and siblings, who dug my clothes out of a Goodwill drop-off box. But I don't know, I would have to say that I'm a man after God's heart. Like I just see my whole life as a journey. I just see it as this miraculous thing that God was able to pluck me out of this life that looked like it could possibly go nowhere, and he had a plan for me. And I had a mother who had this incredible faith and spoke faith over me. And so I was a dreamer. I would just be dreaming, and I literally would have dreams that one day I'm going to meet Earth, Wind & Fire, and I'm going to be just sitting on a plane. I'm going to be in first class, even though I was as poor as can be. But I'm dreaming. I'm going to be in first class, and they're going to just see me, and I'm going to talk to them. They're going to like me. And I would just dream this all the time. And then those dreams came to pass. It's the craziest thing in the world. So I guess I'm no different than anybody else in the world, in the sense that God puts inside of us the potential to have incredible faith. Like, that's what makes us human, is that we're able to think and dream things that don't exist, and then if we do it, they can exist. So I always say that the most greatest gift that God has given to humanity is the ability to dream things that never were, and then if you labor and toil and do it, that they'll come to pass. So I just dreamt. Like, I show people the cover of the book. It has the picture of my mother wearing her scarf and then me wearing my scarf. But I always tell people, I am that same 7-year-old kid on there. I am no different. I'm walking right now, as I'm walking around this conference, I'm dreaming about the movie and the Netflix series.
I was going to say, I can't wait to see the movie. And I don't know, if you're a movie maker out there, you need to be standing in line to get the rights to this book. Honest to goodness, because you've got incredible world-renowned groups, Earth, Wind & Fire, Lenny Kravitz, Lisa Marie Presley, and you've got a great movie with great music, plus
oh, yeah, the music.
You've got a great faith story.
Well, and it's real. And it took me 15 years to write the book. Actually, people say, how long have you been writing it? I've been working on it for 15 years. Mm-hmm. As I was telling you earlier, I read over 300 books to study the craft of writing and memoir.
Yeah, but there's no ghostwriter with you. I mean, these are your words.
No, I've had editors help me, but it's me.
We all do.
Yeah, exactly. But what's crazy is when people ask, I said, actually, I'm 61 right now. And I said, I've been writing this for 50 years because I kept a diary at the age of 10 that I kept writing in all the way through my 20s. So in the memoir are these beautiful diary entries from the kid's heart. And some of them will make you laugh your butt off, and some of them will totally make you cry. But I'm not writing them at 10 or 14 thinking I'm going to have a memoir. I'm just writing my feelings, right?
Right.
But they're so raw, they're so real, they're so unpretentious. And I in the memoir, I kept the grammar exactly the terrible grammar that I had. You know what I mean? Like I didn't try to fix those diary entries. But so when I look back and I go, this is just God's been writing my story. And the reason why I feel like the memoir is the most important accomplishment of my life, more than any of my career things, is simply because there's only going to be so many people in my life that I'm going to be able to affect with my music. There's only so many drummers I'll meet. There's only so many one-on-one conversations I'll have. I'm 61 years old. Maybe I'll make it to my 90s, but I got one third left maybe. So the greatest thing that I can leave this earth and the greatest way I can impact more people is to write a story of this miraculous power of what God is able to do, because people will find hope in that story. And
yes.
They'll go, I had a woman who just recently read it. And she said, you had me laughing. You had me crying. You had me angry. You've taken me on this emotional journey. She goes, but mostly I left with this incredible hope of going after things. She goes, you revived my dreamer spirit again, and you made me feel like I can go for the unattainable, the impossible. And that was my goal. And so a book will be something that transcends me. I just recorded the audio book with Blackstone as well. So when I'm no longer here, the words of this family and this mother and this life will be able to permeate people around the world that I'll never meet and I'll never get to know. But like, that's the legacy that I have to leave this world. It's like, I want... And so I'm kind of an encourager, like a Barnabas in the Bible, and I'm a teacher like a Paul. And so my whole life has always been about encouraging other people, mm-hmm. and then viewing my life as, there's only two ways to view our life. It's like it's either a life of self or a life of service. So I've always viewed my life as a life of service. Whatever God's given me as a platform of fame as a drummer, it's all to be used to lead people to the light, to inspire them, to make them joyful, to... That's all it is, because if it's a journey of self, then it's no fun.
I want to go back. A couple of things I want to make sure we talk about today, because I met you, what was it, 10 years ago?
Maybe? Yes, at least 10 years ago.
And it was really a happenstance meeting, you know, because it was a makeup artist that knew me from da-da-da-da, and says, oh, you need to talk to Laura, and I said, I met you briefly. I was playing with Huckabee, and the drummer didn't show up.
Yeah, and you called
And
me.
I knew a drummer. How do I know a drummer?
That's so funny.
And I called you. Did you tell the story? Because you tell it much better.
It's amazing. So I'm in New York City. So the way that I met Lauren is just so, it's just so God. So I was being interviewed at the Glenn Beck Studios for one of their shows. And the makeup artist was doing my makeup, and she had just seen me do one of the segments from the show. And I didn't know her from a hole in the wall. And she goes, I just love what you're about. I had a different book at that time. It was called The Big Gig. And she goes, I just love your story. I love what you're about. I want to help you. And I was thinking, oh great. I could use some plastic surgery. I could use some more mascara. Make me look better. I really want to help you. I'm like, I still didn't know what she meant. She goes, no, I know everybody in town. Her name was Alexis.
Alexis.
And she was wonderful. And she goes, I know everybody in town. I do everybody's makeup. I'm going to go see Lauren Green in a minute. I'm going to go see Kathy Lee Gifford. I do. And she goes, give me some of your books. Give me your magazine. And I gave her this stuff. And next thing you know, she goes, I talked to Lauren Green. Here's her number. Give her a call. And so I'm walking through New York City with my backpack. Then I get a call from you. And then you're like, hey, can you meet me down at my studio or whatever? Wherever I was like, I'm on my way. Like, it was like one of those like suddenly moments. But had I not had the backpack with me and the books and the things, I was prepared just walking in the streets. Something good could happen.
Right.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's heavy carrying all that stuff. But I'm going, you never know. Somebody might call me or whatever. So you call me. I go up to your office. we're chit-chatting while you're, you know, you got work you're doing too, and then you go, oh look, somebody just canceled all my show on Friday. You want to do the show? It's like that's how I did the show with you, and it was incredible. And then I think it was the next year I was in town for Christmas, just visiting my sister who lived there. So I wasn't even like, I don't even live there. And then you just randomly call me, hey, the drummer from Fox is not there. Is there any chance you could be down here in like
for
a minute
Huckabee show.
For the Huckabee show?
Yes,
for a Christmas thing, and we were playing the Mariah Carey "All I Want for Christmas," and I was like, bam, I'll be there. And I hopped in the cab. So these are the kinds of things that have happened. It's how I met you. It's like these random, so one of these days I'm going to write a book called Random Access, and it's how God just randomly, I guess, one, because I'm obedient, I'll say yes to the craziest things. I'm always ready. I'm expecting in my heart, like, something great's going to happen. God's going to do something amazing. I'm going to sit on the plane. I'm going to meet Steven Spielberg and hand him my book. And he's going to go, this is the movie I've been waiting to do. And I see it.
From your mouth to God's ears. Well, because it's worked so far. It's worked so far. I want to go back to your early childhood. One of the things that this is interesting about you, you are biracial.
Yes.
But it's Mexican and Irish. Irish.
Yeah.
It's not, because everybody thinks you're black.
Well, I may be the only non-black person in the history of the world that could say this. I was black teen centerfold of the month in all the black teen magazines. And to this day, I'll meet people, and when I tell them I'm half Mexican and Irish, you know, and they'll go, I always thought you were a brother, like a light-skinned brother. And the funniest thing in my whole story is that I'm half Mexican, I'm half Irish, but I grew up in Compton. So I always felt black.
Yeah.
Because my community that I grew up with was black. And so then at about 10 years old, we moved from Compton, which is like the set of Sanford and Son,
yeah,
to Grants Pass, Oregon, which is about 12,000 people, which is like the set of the Waltons or Little House on the Prairie. No black people, no Mexican people. We experienced extreme racism. And so I never could find my identity. Like when I was 14, I'm like, there's no black people here. I feel black inside, but there's no black people. So the white people don't receive me because I have a Mexican mother, and we live in a car and a trailer and a tent. So they don't like us just because of that. So
you have other siblings. You're an only child.
There's six of you.
Yeah, six others. So there's seven. So you're
seven,
like the youngest of seven.
I'm the third to the last.
Okay.
But so at 14, you know, I look in the mirror and go, like, who are you? Like, I don't speak Spanish, even though my mother's Mexican and she speaks Spanish. And I'm not Mexican enough to be received by Mexicans. They're not in Oregon anyway. Then I'm not black, but I'm not no longer in Compton, so I'm not received. So I'm completely like a person who was like, who am I? And then I never felt white. I never felt Irish. So I was just kind of like lost. Well, the irony of all of it is, so when I'm 21 or 22 and I get my big gig with New Edition, I become Latin teen centerfold of the month, black teen centerfold of the month, and white teen centerfold of the month in all of these fan magazines. And I said, like, hallelujah, Jesus. I'm received by all the peoples of the world, and they all see me as their own. Even though I was none of those people.
That is an incredible story. But you never knew your father.
Well, growing up, he abandoned
your family.
Yes. He abandoned me when I was an infant. So here is the justice and the poetic justice of God. My father was a drummer, but I never grew up with him. I never knew him. And the only thing he left me, and there's a picture of it in my memoir, it's me about 18 months sitting in a stroller, but beneath my dangling feet, infant toddler feet, is a set of bongos. And that was the only thing he left, was his bongos, which he left accidentally. And so how good is God that my destiny was sitting underneath my feet? I inherited his musical DNA, but never from a relationship. And so I spent, and this is how God will use anybody listening to this broadcast. So the difference between being abandoned by your father and never knowing him, like if my father died in the war and I never knew him, I'd be just another guy who didn't have a dad. But mine was very much alive, and so I sent letters all of my life to him via his grandmother, but he never responded. So as you grow up, it just sends this incredible spear of rejection into you, because in your mind, nothing you're doing is good enough to warrant him coming out from hiding. So nothing got his attention. So it put me on this course. I'm gonna be fantastic. I'm gonna be amazing. I'm gonna do something incredible. So amazing that one day he'll have to see me, and he'll have to say, acknowledge me. And so, but I didn't realize it then, but as I grew older, I realized that pain and suffering that I went through of being rejected and looking for this person's approval and attention is the reason I became a person who could champion other people's dreams, because I knew how to be for them what I needed myself. I knew how to be a father. I've been a father to many people spiritually, countless people, but because I'm giving to them what I wish that I had myself, somebody to champion my dream and somebody to make me. And so God just took all of that pain and just made me a rallier of other people's hearts. And so it's just the way he used me, mainly because I had a tender heart, because my mother was a very beautiful, vivacious woman, but she had this incredible, stalwart faith, but this beautifully tender heart. And so there's some beautiful stories in the book. I mean, every mother in the world is going to love this book, because it's so about this mother, her tenacious spirit, wow, and how she poured these things into us against all odds, and how she had this indomitable joy. So I am the product of her. Like when you meet me and you say, Zorro's just filled with joy all around this place, and it's true. It just exudes from me. But like, that's how she was, and I wish she was still alive, because I could say to her, how the heck did you not give up? Like, with, in the face of all the things that you struggled with, and all the, in Oregon, we got the crud beat out of us just because we were Mexican. And she had to stand by and see all that. But she was the daughter of a Supreme Court justice. So she had come from an aristocratic family in Mexico. So she was somebody. And she always, I realize now, she always carried herself with
that
dignity.
She had a lot of dignity.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's take a break right now on Lighthouse Faith Podcast. We'll be right back with Zorro. And I want to hear more about how you became a drummer, because that's interesting in itself. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, America's number one motorcycle insurer. Everything is more exhilarating when you're on your motorcycle, just like your bike is more protected when you choose Progressive Motorcycle Insurance. They offer coverage for your bike starting as low as $75 per year, and they keep things affordable with discounts like paid in full, multi-policy, and responsible driver. So raise your kickstands and get to quoting at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. $75 premium is for state minimum coverage. Not available in D.C. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
And we're back with Zorro, a world-class percussionist drummer, talking about his book, Maria's Scarf. It really is a memoir.
Yes.
And I'm interested because you didn't make this memoir about you. You
No.
made it about your mother, which
Yes.
is very interesting, because a lot of people was like, oh, here's my background, and it's about, you know, Zorro's story.
Yeah.
But you made it your mother's story. Why is that?
Well, one, she was this incredible woman, and I realized that everything I was able to do was because she was my mother. When I was 7 years old, and people always say, why is it called Maria's Scarf? One, her name was Maria. I prayed to God. I said, I want a title that's beautiful, that's gripping, that's poetic, that it, you know, and it was two words he gave me, Maria's Scarf, because the scarf represents, when I was 7 years old, I was going into this second grade school pictures. My mother always wore scarves, and that's why I still wear them to this day. It's like I wear them to honor her, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she loves scarves. And then one day I looked at her and I said, Mama, you look like a movie star. I want to look like you. I want to look fancy. And there was a budding rock star inside of me. Even though I hadn't played drums yet, there was a peacock, like a musician wants to be different. And I was like, I want to wear a scarf. No, mijo, you can't wear a scarf. The boys will beat you up. This is the United States. It's not Mexico. You can't wear a scarf. Mijo, they'll beat you up, I promise you. And I was like, no, Mama, I want to wear a scarf. I don't care what they think. And I said, Elvis Presley wears a scarf. Tom Jones wears a scarf, and they're not sissies, they're cool, you know. And so she relented, and she knelt down, and then she tied her orange silk scarf around my neck, which is on the cover of the book. And then she whispered in my ear, and she said, one day, mijo, you're going to do something phantasmical with your life. And that was the word she used, was phantasmical. It was her kind of mixture of fantastic and amazing.
Yeah.
So I felt like when she did that, looking back, it's like she metaphorically tied the hope of one generation around the neck of the next generation, and she made a decree that I would do something amazing with my life. And then she would tell me these amazing stories, like that she'd never recanted till the day she died. She would say, when you were born in the hospital, there was a bright light around your head like a halo. And I said, Mama, you're pretending like I'm an angel. She said, no, I didn't say you were an angel. I said there was a bright light, like God had set you apart for something great in this world. And that's the way she spoke to me. And so even in the midst of not feeling special, in the midst of moving 40 times, sometimes with my radio red flyer wagon, we'd move our furniture from one apartment to the next, somehow I still had this hope because of this incredible faith that she had. So I wanted the book, it's kind of a two protagonist story. It's how my mother instills this faith and hope in me and makes me a dreamer, and then I grow up to be this kid who just has audacity.
I want to get to the story, how you became a drummer, how you really first became a drummer. You were actually a janitor.
Exactly.
Right?
Remember there was an old product in the 70s or 60s. It's called Janitor and a Drum. It was like a cleansing product.
Right.
So I was like the janitor. So I had an after school, a high school job. I was in the 9th or 10th grade. And the after school job, I really wanted a job around music. And I asked my guidance counselor, could he find me something with music? Came back a week later, said, I couldn't really find you what you wanted, but I got you a job. And it was not the kind of job any kid wants. You can be a janitor at the high school that I go to school at. So the school bell rings, and kids see me cleaning the toilets and vacuuming, and it's the most embarrassing job. And then the jocks are making fun of me and spitting at me in the bathroom. And, you know, but I took the job because I was always a hard worker. But here's how God had a plan from that job. So it's crazy. It's kind of like the scene in Good Will Hunting. So at the end of the job, it's a two-hour after-school job, the last 10 or 15 minutes, my job was to clean the band room. So I would go in there and vacuum, put the music stands away, and then I would sneak on the drums because no one was there. I never played. I never took a lesson. Other than at 10, my mother gave me a Mickey Mouse drum set for Christmas that I destroyed in about a half an hour because it was paper heads. It was just a toy.
Right.
But so I'm 16, and I get on there with the sticks, and all I can say is that God gave me a gift, because from the first minute I got on there, I could play. I wasn't great, but I could play. Like it was like I could play the drums. And so I got on there and played every day, and then I would dream about like being on the stages of the world, and just in the 10 minutes before I had to catch the activity bus home. Then one day, unbeknownst to me, the band director was in his office with his door closed, but I didn't know he was there. And then he came out and startled me. He said, "What are you doing?" I'm sorry, I'm done cleaning. He goes, "Wait right here, kid." I thought he was going to go get my boss and fire me. He comes back with another guy, and he goes, "Do what you were doing again. What was I doing? Play like you were playing." And I played, and then they looked at each other, and he goes, "Kid, you're a rhythmic genius. You got crazy talent." He goes, "I need you in the marching band, the stage band, and this guy's the swing choir director. We need you in all the school bands." So mind you, I got in the whole school band program because I was discovered as the janitor. I had been trying to get in the school band programs from the fourth grade all the way through junior high to play the drums. And every year they turned me down and said, "We have too many drummers. We don't need any drummers." And so I was never going to get in the school band program. I got in it because he caught me drumming on the job. Not drinking on the job, but drumming on the job. And then you got to understand this about my background. So I hated school. I didn't hate learning. I hated school because the bullies, people making fun of me. And the school was always getting in the way of my dreams. And at that time, I dreamed I was going to be the world's greatest chicken farmer because I was raising chickens at the time. I started with two, and I built this empire of chickens. And I was going to be, and I was winning all these prizes at the fair. And my goal was, I'm going to be the world's greatest chicken farmer, and I'm going to build this empire of chickens. And
Purdue.
Purdue, exactly. And then there were show birds, there were exotic birds, and I was making money and everything. And then my St. Bernard came in one day and clobbered them and killed the whole chicken thing. So that's how music came. So anyway, so I'm the kid who's thinking I'm going to be a chicken farmer. And all of a sudden, but I didn't like going to school because I was building my chicken coops and reading my chicken books. And in school, it was that Mark Twain quote, but it's actually somebody else, and I had hanging above my wall. It said, "I never let school interfere with my education." So I skipped 60 days of school in the 9th grade. 60 on my literal report card, which I still have, 60 days.
Let's not give kids the idea that you should follow up for that example.
But it was different times, and they didn't care. But I was at home reading my books and learning things I wanted to learn. And then it was 61 and a half that year. And then it was 60 the next year. Then when I got in the school band program, it went down to 23 absences. So I improved 66% improvement because I wanted to be there now.
Right.
I wanted to play in all the ensembles. So that's how the whole journey started for the high school was just being a janitor. So that's why it's like a movie. It's like a Netflix
series.
Now
you graduated, but this is, I think, an interesting story. You were a graduate. You already graduated from high school.
Yeah.
But you're down in L.A.
Yeah.
And you're kind of in
Beverly Hills.
Beverly Hills. And how did you get to Beverly Hills?
It's another God moment. So I'm in this, I join a cover band after I graduate high school. They're like a top cover band in Oregon. It's my first professional gig. Their dream was to come down to Disneyland and audition for Disneyland and get a house band gig.
Yeah.
Well, and I went with them. I'm 17 years old, and we auditioned for Disneyland. They had the gig a couple years before, so they were pretty much a shoe in, but then they didn't get the gig. And then, so now I'm down in L.A., and things are beginning to fall apart. They're getting a few gigs here and there. And then I told my, then I got into like kind of an argument with the bass player, and then I quit the band. So I called my mother, and I told her, I said, Mom, I think I'm going to have to come back to Eugene, because at that time we were living in Eugene, Oregon. And I said, because the band's falling apart. And she told me something I'll never forget. She said, don't come back, mijo. She said, don't come back. If you come back, you'll never live your dream. There's nothing here for you in Eugene. You'll never, you have talent. You've got to find a way to stick it out there. You've got to find a way to stay. And so I didn't know what to do. And then she reminded me that my sister, who was a model, was modeling down. And she just recently got an apartment in Beverly Hills with a roommate. But she was traveling a lot doing photo shoots. So she said, call Patricia. See if she's there. So I called her, and she just happened to be there, and I told her what happened. She said, well, why don't you come down to my apartment? It's like about an hour drive, and see what you could do around this part of town. Like, I'm her little brother. And I said, okay. So I drove with my drums and everything. So I'm in Beverly Hills at her apartment, and I kind of don't really know what to do, because, like, I hadn't been in L.A. since I was a kid in Compton, so I don't know the new L.A. I'm not driving there.
Right.
So I'm like, and I wasn't like, even though I graduated high school, I didn't think I could hang out at like UCLA and try to meet, like, where's the music department? It's too big.
Right.
So this idea came to me because I saw that there was Beverly Hills High School around not too far from there. And I thought, well, that's a high school. I'm just out of high school. So why don't I go to the high school? And so this is what I did one day. I had my pimped out Panama Jack hat. I had shades. I had a yellow silk shirt, yellow silk pants. My sister bought me some clothes so I could look like I lived there and bought me a nice watch. And I had a boombox that I spent my last $200 on. It was the Panasonic boombox that Earth, Wind & Fire was advertising in the ad. So I'm like, I want to get the Earth, Wind & Fire boombox. And I had Earth, Wind & Fire's greatest hits playing on the cassette. And so I decided I'm just going to sit on the lawn at lunchtime with my drum practice pad and my sticks and crank Earth, Wind & Fire, and I'm just going to play. And there's inevitably going to be some musicians that go to school that are going to go, who is this guy? Who is this new guy? And that's exactly what happened. So while I was playing, two different guys, and I did this for like a week or so, and two different guys came up to me. One of them, his name was Kennedy, and he became my friend right away. He was a bass player. Well, he ended up becoming Kennedy Gordy, who was Berry Gordy's son,
the
founder of Motown Records. Yeah. So a month later, I'm up at the Motown mansion. And you got to understand, Motown was my record label.
Oh my
Every
goodness.
Album and artist on Motown was in our family collection. The other kid on the lawn who came up to me one day was Lenny Kravitz. And they were both like, oh, you're new here? I really wasn't planning to lie, but I kind of had to pretend like I'm a new student here, because why am I here? So I was like, yeah, I just transferred, you know, from Eugene. And they were like, oh, that's awesome. And so, do you really play? I go, yeah, I really play. So they set up Lenny set up a jam session in the band room to introduce me to all the other musicians at Beverly High. And then I could play. And they were all like, their jaw dropped. They're like, oh, man, you're awesome. Like, we need a good drummer. And next thing you know, I'm going there every day pretending that I'm a student.
You know, thank goodness, no IDs.
Oh.
No metal detectors. Nobody checking the records.
You couldn't do that today.
You could.
Like, I went by there recently as I was writing the memoir. I wanted to relive the experience. And it's all fences up high, like chain link fence. Like, when I was there, it was just a beautiful open campus.
Yeah.
And just, I just walked on the lawn. It's 1980. So within the 2 weeks of doing that, I become friends with Lenny. I go there every day. I hide in the library during class time to pretend like I'm studying. You know, and then when the bell rings, I come out and I'm mingling, and nobody ever really asks me, because no one would have the audacity to do that.
Because you're the great drummer.
Well, yeah, and I'm going like, I just got to keep coming. So here's the irony. I missed 60 days, 61 days of school. Now I'm afraid I'm going to get kicked out. because I want to keep going every day because I don't have to do homework. But and I'm jamming with Lenny and the band guys, and then my first television show ever was at on the Beverly Hills High School station. They had their own school station. It was called KBEV, and I'm on there with some of the guys from Beverly playing jazz. And to this day, Carla Gordy Bristol, who is Barry Gordy's niece, still thought that I was a legitimately enrolled student there because I had lunch with her like about a year ago. And she goes, oh, yeah, what, Beverly? And I was like, yeah, isn't it funny like that I never actually went there? And she's like, what are you talking about? You graduated from there. Like, so I didn't actually go. So you were there every day. Of course you went there. I'm like, no, I wasn't actually a student. She still didn't know. Because when you start seeing somebody all the time, just kind of assume. Eventually, I kind of let Lenny and Kennedy know. And then Lenny was always covering for me. He would always tell everybody, because he wanted me there every day.
Yeah.
And then I had a car and he didn't. So he would, and I'd say, okay, well, we will drive everywhere in my car, but you got to drive because I want to practice. So Lenny was my chauffeur driving all around Hollywood while I was practicing. Because I was like, I got the car, you know where you're going. And then he would take me, and then he took me to his house where I met his mom, who's Roxy Roker, who played on the Jeffersons.
Right.
And then Roxy became kind of like a second mother to me. And,
wow.
And so I'm thinking to myself, not long ago, I was living in a car in a place with no running water, no electricity, no anything. Now I'm in the home of rock stars and movie stars. And then I was in Barry Gordy's house. Then one day I'm in Barry Gordy's house playing pinball machines. Kennedy's the only kid in the world who had pinball machines in his house that you didn't have to put quarters in. So I'm going, oh my gosh, I could just play pinball, I could do whatever. So I'm playing pinball, and then all of a sudden I see two Rolls Royces pulling up the driveway, and then I hear the doorbell ring like a couple minutes later, and I'm waiting for somebody to go answer it. Nobody answers it. I just take it upon myself to go answer the door. I open the door, and it's Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5.
Oh, my God.
And I'm going like,
oh, my God.
And they're my favorite group in the world growing up, right? I belong to the fan club. I still have the book, The Soul of the Jackson 5 from Scholastic Books. And I'm going, Michael, Jermaine, Tito, Jackie, like, come on in. Like, there's a jam room over there. And Jermaine, there's a bass. Guys, I know all your songs. I can play Stop the Love You Save. And Michael's like, oh, kid, you got a lot of heart. I was over the moon, and I wasn't hiding it. And I was like, you know, my mother always said I'd meet you. I wrote in my diary one day I was going to meet you guys. Like, I'm a good drummer. I can play all your music. Come on, let's jam. Oh, man, we're here for a meeting with Barry, but maybe someday.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've kind of run out of time. Zorro, your book is amazing. It's called Maria's Scarf.
A memoir of a mother's love,
yes.
A son's perseverance, and dreaming big.
If you have a dream and you don't know if it will ever come to pass, I'll tell you, get this book. Be inspired, because honestly, it's like you're open to whatever God has in front of you.
Yeah.
You just have to be open, I'll tell you. Zorro, thank you so much. The book is out April 30th.
Yep.
And like I said, I can't wait to see the movie.
Well, I thank you for having that faith, because that's what God showed me, that would be a movie and like a streaming series.
Like I said, if you're a movie maker, get in line now.
That's so sweet.
This is going to be wonderful. Anyway, thank you so much for being on Lighthouse Faith Podcast. It's just been an absolute blessing.
Thank you, Lauren. It's been an honor and a privilege, and you're the best. You've always been an advocate for me. I love you, and I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you all for listening to Lighthouse Faith Podcast. I'm Lauren Green. Have a blessed day. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. Amazon Prime members can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music app, or just hit the follow button on your favorite podcast player.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, in these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.